KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, offering a new 2025 lineup of vehicles at your local Toyota dealer, including a new Tacoma with turbocharged four-cylinder engines and a hybrid powertrain option. The San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
In 1965, Russ Meyer unleashed Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill on an unsuspecting American audience.
For your own safety, see Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill. Wild women, wild wheels, race the fastest pussycats and they'll beat you to death. Superwoman, belted, buckled and booted.
No one was quite ready for the character of Varla, or the belted, buckled, and booted Tura Satana, who played her.
And for the first time on the screen, a haymaking, belly-busting, karate-chopping, judo-flipping fight to end them all. Superwoman against man. The prize, life itself.
Welcome back to listener-supported KPBS Cinema Junkie. I'm Beth Accomando. Tura Satana was the best role model I could have. Not a traditional one, but one that boldly proclaimed you don't have to obey any rules. When I saw her as Varla in Faster Pussycat Kill Kill, I knew she was dangerous. Not just to the characters in the movie, but to a society that feared strong women it could not control. Cody Jarrett chronicles the iconic actress's life and legacy in the new documentary, Tura. So, to discuss the movie and the actress herself, are director Cody Jarrett and Tura's friend and manager, Suzanne Perry. I need to take one quick break, and then I'll be back to talk about badass Tura Satana.
Faster Pussycat, I could never get tired of watching it.
Tura was a leader, and she was sexy, and she was in control.
She was out there kicking some butt and looking great.
She's the strongest character in this film.
She was a radical warrior feminist.
Good. Let's get started.
Welcome back to KPBS Cinema Junkie. I'm Beth Accomando. I began my interview by asking Suzanne Perry to tell us a little bit about who Tura was off screen.
Oh, boy. She had so many different little parts to her that it's hard to boil them all down. I guess her true thing was she was wonderfully sweet, very subtle in some ways. If you didn't know who she was, like I introduced her to many people. One time I took her to dinner with a friend of mine who had no clue. And he just thought, oh, she's a nice lady. But she was very giving and very loving and very loyal. And I met her in the 90s and we just clicked. And it was one of those things where she said, we did a show together, a three-day show, and I worked with her before, and she just called me up the next day and said, I've made up my mind, you're going to be my manager. Okay, sure, why not? This will be fun. And it was. But she was just really, she had that Varla side to her, definitely. And she didn't take crap from anybody. And she was, it was just the way she lived her life. She was positive about everything. I didn't hear that much negativity ever coming from her. Very, very strong, powerful woman, stood up to anybody. You know, she wasn't that tall. People thought she was really tall. No, not so much, like 5'6". But her personality came in and she was huge. But she was just the most wonderful friend, the most wonderful human being. Give you the shirt off her back, literally. You know, somebody said, oh, I love that t-shirt. And she'd, here. So that's who she was.
Right. Well, when you say that, you know, the immediate vision that comes to mind is, okay, off goes the shirt, boobs come out. You know?
That's right.
It's Tura, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly.
And Cody, you have just directed a documentary about Tura Satana. Now, Suzanne mentioned she had a Varla side. For people who don't know what that means, what was that screen image that was so iconic that you capture in part in your documentary?
Varla was an authentic female badass when that really did not exist, right? It's like 1966 in Hollywood. For the most part, every role for an Asian American female was either a hooker or a geisha, right? So then you've got Tura coming along as Varla, who is in Faster Pussycat Kill Kill, is the leader of a girl gang
You've got a weird sense of humor.
Try again. I get funnier.
Look, I don't know what the hell your point is, but I don't...
The point is of no return, and you've reached it. You can still climb in that kitty car and take a hike, unless you can fight better than you can drive.
They murder. They're looking for money. They don't take shit from anybody. You know, she was just a badass. So the thing about Tura that made the character of Varla so Varla's influenced a ton of people. The character of Varla and Tura playing Varla, as you know, has influenced like so many different things. But that came from authenticity, like Tura's real life. Tura had a very, very hard life, and being able to bring all of her experiences to the camera as Varla, that's what really made the magic. That was like lightning in a bottle. It's like if anybody else would have been cast as Varla, it wouldn't have worked. And it's incredible that the role of Varla even was written. I mean, at the time, you just didn't think of, you know, a statuesque Asian American woman, buxom, and able to like know karate and know judo and kick a bunch of ass. So it was like almost the most random character you could write. But they, Jack Moran wrote it. And then here comes Tura, who fit right in perfectly. It is like literally lightning in a bottle. It's just like something that could only happen once. It could never happen again like that.
Well, I don't remember specifically when I first saw Faster Pussycat or first saw like an image of Tura Satana. But I know it influenced me. And I know that, I mean, I just remember like, it was inspirational. It was this moment of like, oh man, like you can be a badass, you know, you don't have to take shit from people. And she has so many great lines in that film. And it's just like, if that's the only film she had ever made, like she still would be an iconic figure today. Because, and the look of her too, like she had such a striking presence, visual presence in that film with those harsh bangs and the black hair and the like plunging neckline that, you know, revealed this impressive cleavage. Like she was just, she just cut an image that you could not forget. And Cody, when did the idea of the documentary kind of first arise, and how did you get involved in this?
The idea for the documentary came about when Tura was still alive and Tura and Suzanne were doing shows. They would be doing autograph shows or personal appearances, and women and kind of disenfranchised people of all kinds were constantly approaching Tura, being like, hey, you've been such a huge inspiration to me. I know what happened in your life, and it's inspired me to be a better person or make changes in my life for my own health or for my own self-improvement. And that happened so much that Tura and Suzanne realized that, wow, like the limited amount of people that are being positively impacted by Tura's story, if we could find a vehicle that would kind of get this out to more people, to more women, it could like maybe be helpful to more people. It could be even more of an inspiration to more people. So that's where the idea for the film came about. I already knew Suzanne because I had cast Tura in Sugarbox. So we were already pals. So the idea was there. Unfortunately, it didn't come to fruition when Tura was still alive. There was some messiness and it just didn't quite work out, unfortunately. But after she passed away, it came together so quickly and so powerfully. It's like you could almost feel all the planets align. You actually could feel that. It was just like such a surge of energy. To base the film on, of course, Tura has an unpublished memoir. There are a few different versions of things kind of, so it was kind of a lot to navigate, but the story is very clear, and you know, that's it.
And Suzanne, did you feel an obligation kind of to get her story out after she passed away?
Yeah. We were working on it when she started to get sick. You know, she had the heart issues and she was going down a lot, and I said, oh my god, this is, you know, and she kept saying, I gotta make my movie, and she was trying to do more than she should have been doing. And so I was getting nervous about it because that was all she talked about towards the end. You know, who's going to make my movie? How are we going to do this? I talked her into writing her book, her autobiography, because she didn't want to do that. And she finally did that. But when she was getting really sick and I was kind of like out here by myself, we went into a business deal together where that if anything happened to her, I would be the keeper of the jewels, her legacy, she wanted that to continue, and I was doing it already. So thank God for that, because I had all the legal rights, because she wanted to set me up, because it was scary when she was having a lot of problems. And, you know, she wasn't like, you know, take a pill and go to bed. She wouldn't take her pills. So she did that. We carried on. And then when she passed, it was like, I wear her ashes around my neck. Where's my movie? When's it getting made? I hear it in the ethers. So it was like, it was a huge thing. I promised the family, I promised the fans. And yeah, it was something that had to be done. There was no like, no, I'm not going to do that. So it took 20 years. So, you know, it's done. Thank God. But yes, huge, huge.
And Cody, you were able to get her daughters involved in this also. What was that like, kind of going through some of her history, some of which maybe they weren't completely familiar with? What was that whole process like?
You just touched on something really great. Okay, so the process was incredible. We did 2 days of interviews with Lonnie and Jade. Of course, there's so much material to go through. And they were amazing. They didn't hold back at all. They were just really sincere about their feelings and really honest about things I would ask them or situations that happened or times in their life, their relationship with their mother as Tura, having Tura as a mother, what is that like? Then in terms of them discovering things they didn't know, that was huge. Like after they saw the film, there were pieces in there that they did not know before. And then they saw the film and were like, oh, but I think the most... maybe the most telling thing, this is slightly off topic, but interviewing Jade and Lonnie, they spoke of their childhood and Tura wasn't, I don't want to give away too much, but Tura wasn't necessarily available as a mother all the time. So they kind of had to, you know, Lonnie had to parent Jade somewhat, and they told a lot of stories. And there was a lot of detail there about their home life. Then at some point after that, I was given the 8mm home movies from the Satana family. And after I got them transferred and was watching them, I was blown away because everything that Jade and Lonnie talked about was right there on these home movies. And it was absolutely chilling. It was because it's just like, wow, like you've just discovered gold, like a gold mine, you know, a planet made of gold, you know, it was really like just so emotionally powerful to be able to tap into that. So to answer the original question, the daughters were great. She loved her fans more than anything. And ultimately, she wanted them to know everything and everyone to be part of her. So them being forthright with everyone about who she was does her justice. That does her legacy proper respect because that's what she wanted. She wanted to share herself and they followed through on that.
Now, in chronicling her life, you use this memoir kind of read as sort of a narration through it. Her life was amazing. And there's a couple points where you mention that early in her career, she was like telling different stories to different reporters, kind of changing facts and things like that. So as someone kind of documenting her life, how were you feeling about the information you were sharing? And like, what stuff did you feel was the truth and what was the exaggeration and kind of like, how are you going to present some of that when she was kind of fabricating things at certain points in her life?
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's a very fine line to walk, but we found it. I think, first of all, we had all the interviews were great. And in terms of material and old newspaper clippings of her and articles, we had enough material to make 9 of this film. So you just had to choose very carefully, not only for what was we felt was most accurate, but also like what is going to work in a 90 or 100 minutes. You don't have 4 hours to tell the story. You've got like a really short amount of time to cram in all this information. So you've kind of just got to like pick something that works cinematically and flows and moves. I think I can answer for both of us on this. I feel good about everything that's in there. Like we didn't put anything in there that we felt was at least not based in the truth or didn't have some kind of backup. Again, it was also not our job to be Woodward and Bernstein. You know, the whole point of the film was to tell Tura's story from her perspective, right? Because a lot of people could have made this film a different way from the outsider's perspective. Like, oh, here was Tura. She was a cult actress. She was a pinup. She did all these things. Let's interview people and talk about how great she was. That was not the point of this at all. We flipped the script completely. This was to be Tura's point of view, or for the audience, you sitting in the 356 in the front seat next to her, experiencing this insane life as it's just flying at you. So really, more than anything, we just wanted to stay true to Tura's words, Tura's story, and Tura's Tura's feelings about these experiences, most of which people have no idea until they see the movie.
That's kind of it. She it was her story, it was her life, and we wanted to be as open and truthful and authentic as we could. And it was always, I felt like she was right here, standing here in the chair next to us, looking over us like, that's not right. That's not right. You could just feel her directing with Cody. And it was, we just wanted people to know who she really was. And nobody really knew. And it was time. And it's a perfect time to see a woman like that. She was most wanted to tell her story. She thought it would help other women get through. And that was, she wanted to be an inspiration. And it should, if my telling my story helps one person, she was happy.
Tura obviously did love to bend the truth just for her own amusement. So you got to take that grain of salt, put that grain of salt on everything that she would put out there. So saying that, but also, I also wouldn't doubt her too much. And there's, and I have one specific reason why. There was something I did discover while doing the research for the film. It was, I don't know what year it was. It was this very obscure newspaper article about this horrific train accident. It was a commuter train traveling somewhere in the Midwest. The train wreck is like a fugitive style train wreck. It's like derailment. A bunch of people die. A bunch of people are injured. It is like this horrible, horrible crash. And Tura is noted in this newspaper article as one of the two women helping to pull people out of the train as survivors. She survived, and her and this other woman were helping other people on the train. Obviously, huge life-changing event, right? Tura's daughters didn't even know that that happened. Like, they did not know until I told them about it. So that just shows you the scope of Tura's life and how many insane things were happening to her, that this one event that would have like been the defining moment for almost anybody else in their life, to Tura, wasn't even worth mentioning. That's how much huge stuff she had going on. So I would not doubt Tura too much, because, you know, there's a lot more there than we're ever gonna know, ever.
Well, I don't want to reveal anything that comes up in the film, because, you know, this is a documentary, but it really plays out like this intense, dramatic narrative with plot turns and surprises. And like, I want people to go in and be as surprised as I was by where things went, because I knew a little bit about her. You know, I followed her career a bit. I enjoyed all her movies, but there was so much in this film that I had no clue about, and it was fabulous to see it. I mean, when you were putting it together, I mean, were you kind of structuring it almost like a drama instead of, you know, the way you would conventionally think of a documentary?
Abso-freaking-lutely. Absolutely. I mean, Tura's life was so big and in your face and heart and like poignantly heartbreaking and over the top kick ass. It's like the only way to do this was to make it really cinematic. There's no way this could have been a Talking Heads documentary. There's no way. You just had to get into her skin and freaking put the pedal to the metal and go. That was the only way to do this film.
So again, I don't want to spoil things, because it does play out like this mystery or like a movie that she would have been in. But it does start with something that's pretty traumatic. And I'm just curious, like, how you found out about this and like how you decided to start the movie at this point.
Okay, so the traumatic incidents that happened to Tura were things that she spoke about her entire life, that her family knew about, her people, her lovers knew about, people that were intimately involved with her, that were all around her. These were things, it kind of wasn't an open secret, but everybody knew. Initially, when we did use that as kind of the intro for the film, the jumping off point, some people were like, wow, this is so dark. Are you sure you want to do this? But it's like, that sets the tone for Tura's entire life. Like that event is the thing that enables people to see why she did what she did and why she made the choices that she made and where it landed her. So you kind of had to start there, because that was the event that created Varla. So you needed to start right there. Then you could go back and, you know, retrace some steps or whatever. But it really did need to start there, because that, I mean, horrible event, but powerful event in Tura's life, life-altering event in her life, like the life-altering event, really. So if you start, when we started there, the rest of it flowed much better, because it just gave correct perspective, and it gave the through line again for why she did the things she did, which we won't talk about because we don't want to spoil it.
Well, and the thing that I found really interesting and compelling about that is it does start at this traumatic moment at a dark point, but she really refused to be the victim, and she refused to let that I guess she refused to let that keep her down. And it was like the thing that just fired her up, it seemed like, and gave her that, like, nope, I'm not going to take any more shit like that from anyone. Like, it just seemed to define her in a way that you might not expect it to happen that way, like that other people would let it crush them.
That's totally true. When we were interviewing Dita, she brought up several other similar stories. She talked about, like, I forget the woman's name, but it was like the best ballerina in the world had some very traumatic experience happen earlier in her life. And I think that's, you know, true for a lot of people. It's like, that's the, and for Tura especially, right? That was so traumatic. It's just like, kind of like all bets are off after this. Like, I don't have to follow your rules. I'm going to write my life story the way I want to write it now. And screw you if you don't like it, because this is what I'm going to do.
And you actually had the world premiere of the film here in San Diego with the Asian Film Festival. What was that like?
We were releasing the baby. We were birthing the baby to the world. We had never shown it to an audience before. We would have private screenings and show little things to our friends, but we had never, oh my God, there's going to be a lot of people in the audience. And we didn't know what they were going to think, how they were going to react. It was all of this stuff going around. And I remember just sitting there going, wait, you know, after the first opener, and there was just silence for a lot of it. And we thought, oh God, oh God. And then the laughter and the tears and everything happened, but it was scary. It was wonderful. It was mind blowing. And it was pretty fabulous. Pretty fabulous.
Yeah. That was great. That was a great experience, you know, and thank you for all your everything there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Your participation in that was great. And I think it was the first time Jade and Sharla, Tura's granddaughter, mm-hmm. had seen the film. They didn't.
Yes.
They trusted us. They trusted me. They trusted us to do the right thing. They didn't see anything before the finished film. So I believe they were crying during the film. At the end of the film, they were sitting next to Suzanne and crying at the end.
They turned to me and my wife, and they just looked at us, and they had tears streaming, and they said, thank you. That was it. Just thank you. And they were done. We're like, oh my God. So that, you know, we're trying to control ourselves. It was just this big tear fest. And then we all went on stage, which was wonderful for them to be able to go up and talk about their mom and their grandma. And it couldn't have gone better. That was a first for them, for seeing all those home movies. I mean, they went through a whole cycle of emotions, because sitting next to them was like, oh God, oh Lord, you know, and it was
right,
crying and laughing and oh my God, remember that? Yeah, it was, you know, it was great.
Well, she was fortunate in that later in life, she did have a lot of acclaim. And I mean, she did feel the love of her fans, where, you know, she was able to screen her film, able to go to conventions and stuff. So what was that like for her to kind of be able to, like, capture that towards the end of her life?
I think for me working with her, when I met her, I was handling all the Russ Meyer actors and actresses. So I was already doing events. And when she came into it, and then it was right at the very beginning. And, you know, everything was happening, but she was kind of like, really, really, that kind of thing. And then we just sort of started working together and booking shows. And the first few shows she went to, she was just like, holy cow, people remember me. They want my autograph. They want to see me. And then it just took off. We did the merchandising and the statues and it all went nuts after that. She was thrilled. She was always mystified about it, like thinking, oh, well, that'll be good. But that was today, and tomorrow, who knows, they'll forget me. But she was not really coherent of how huge her fan base was and how much love. But wherever we went, it was thrown at her in droves. And it was really good to see her. She was so happy. Those were the happy times for her. She was always happy. She was always laughing and joking and goofing around. She was a very happy person.
She didn't walk down the street like, you know, karate chopping people and kicking over parking meters.
Well, a few times, but I, you know, those were so minor. She was a great friend because she used to stand up for me. Oh, my Lord, if anybody even messed with me in any way, it was like she, I mean, I caught her one time. Somebody said something and she said, look, you mess with my manager, you mess with my friend, you mess with me. And I'll never forget that. I was like, and it was, that was it. You don't do that. Very loyal.
And Cody, do you remember the first time you saw Teresa Tana in a film or, you know, the first time she made an impact on you?
Absolutely. I actually discovered Russ Meyer through Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. That film has such a huge impact on everybody who sees it, bar none. Of course, I wanted to see more Russ Meyer films, and I saw Pussycat was the next one that I saw. And it was so different, but it was also just so cool. You knew. And again, I was new to Russ at the time. This is a long time ago when I saw Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. It was on VHS. But it was just like, there was something about it that was just like so badass. It transcended so many other films that kind of looked the same, but it had a certain intangible quality that just like cut through all of that and really got to you. And so, yeah.
Well, one of the things I loved about the film is that she's not by any means a conventional heroine, or like she's not really the good character, the morally upright, or the, you know, and yet we are so riveted to her from beginning to end. Like, I love films like that where it kind of flips what normal expectations are. And she's so iconic, even though she is somebody who like kills people, or, you know, she's not like the role model that you'd want your kids to grow up with on in one sense, but she is the absolute role model in the sense of like, yes, you know, you don't take shit from anyone and you don't follow the rules and you, you know, write your own path, but then you live with the consequences, like whatever those are. But yeah, I mean, she was, it's such a striking figure in that film. And that film just holds up, you know, you can show it anytime and it's still like captures the audience.
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't hurt that Russ was like an absolutely amazing filmmaker. I mean, say what you will about things like The Immoral Mr. Tees or whatever. Forget the plot for a second, okay? Russ Meyer was an expert director and cameraman going back to World War II, where he filmed a lot of like Patton coming into a city after the United States had taken it back, or, you know, somewhere in Europe, and Patton's army came in. A lot of times that was Russ Meyer footage. So Russ was like this insane, like really good photographer his entire life. He was a still photographer. He shot things in World War II. So like film was in his blood. He was an exceptional photographer and editor. Like just that level of technical expertise is insane. And that's that really helps it too.
And Cody, you mentioned that you had cast her in a film. So what was that process like? Like, how did you approach her? And like, what was it like directing her at that point in her career?
Okay, this is a great story. Okay, so you see in the background here, this is a one sheet for Sugarbox. That was the film. Sugarbox is a 1970s period women in prison film. It's like, all right, I'll be honest, it's like not cliche, but you could find every Jack Hill film, every, you know, every Caged Heat, every Big Bird Cage, you know, Foxy Brown. You can find every element from all of those films in Sugarbox. It really is an homage.
Women's prison. Murder. Rape. Mayhem. A living nightmare where death is the only parole. But for the girls of Sugar State Women's Prison, it's just another day inside the Sugar Box.
Anyway, I'd written the part of the warden for Erica Gavin initially, but Suzanne, as she mentioned, managed all the Russ Meyer women. So Suzanne was like, listen, I also manage Teresa Tana, Kate and Lativa Dodd. I'm like, okay, stop right there. Yes, yes. So, and then, you know, to her, they're just, she's just such a real person. She's so authentic. It was very, you know, very comfortable getting to know her and very fun working with her. Fun working with her and Kitten, because those are actors from the 1960s and 70s where you just fucking went in and did what needed to be done. You need to kick in a door, you kick in the door. You know, it's just like, there's no question about it. There's no, you know, there's just like, there's no second guessing it. It's like, this is what's scripted. I understand this. I'm going to do this. There's a directness to it that keeps things very authentic and very powerful. It was great working with Tura in that respect, and Kitten, because they were just, you know, this is what's scripted. This is what needs to be done. Okay, let's do it. You know, I loved working with both of them.
Well, I want to thank both of you very much for both talking about Tura Satana and about the documentary. And thank you for making it.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this and for our thing in San Diego and helping us promote this. It's just, it's really, it means a lot when people like it, because it's that's what we did. We wanted people to see this and love it and experience this and learn something from it.
Our point was to tell Tura's story in an entertaining and dynamic way so people, it would, you know, be impactful or whatever. But also with the film, we could have also just preached to the choir, you know, like the people that know who Tura Satana was. We could have gotten stayed really inside with all of these things. But the point was, like, Tura's story was so powerful and so universal that it's like, this is really meant for everyone. So,
yeah. So, I mean, one of the things about the documentary too, is that I had this huge admiration for Tura Satana and saw her as this, you know, incredible icon, and your documentary only increased my admiration for her tenfold. And tell people where they can find the film.
First of all, thank you. That's exactly the point. So I'm glad it's working. All right. So the film is kind of starting to explode right now. We just had a 5-week run. The film had a 5-week run at the Lumiere Music Hall. And we have a special event screening at the San Francisco Alamo Draft House on November 19th. One of their Weird Wednesdays. This will be hosted by Peaches Christ. Tura's family will be there. This is going to be absolutely an epic kickoff. So, you know, there's the film is just like starting to go out everywhere right now.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That was director Cody Jarrett and Suzanne Perry talking about actress Tura Satana and the new documentary, Tura. And that's Tura with an exclamation point. The film is still opening in theaters, but it's now available streaming on platforms such as Apple TV. Go to turamovie.com for more information. And that wraps up another edition of KPBS listener-supported Cinema Junkie. If you enjoy the podcast, then please share it with a friend, because your recommendation is the best way to build an addicted audience. You can also help by leaving a review. Till our next film fix, I'm Beth Accomando, your resident cinema junkie.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head-on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfire safety.